The WNBA draft is live tonight on ESPN, and Oregon star Sabrina Ionescu is set to be the number one overall pick for the New York Liberty. New York has five picks in the first round, so you will see who will join her in the Big Apple. Big night tonight, 7 Eastern on ESPN and the ESPN app, and we welcome all of you who've chosen to get up with us, and we thank you for that. Again, we thank, as always, the medical professionals, the first responders, and everyone who is keeping us safe and healthy. Our job is to keep you entertained, and so let's start doing that right now. Big hour coming your way. We're going to get up with Tua. Adam Schefter is standing by with a very interesting note on how he has been getting ready for this draft and what some of the latest is surrounding his status. That's right off the top. And then Zach Ertz will join us live in this hour. Are his Eagles ready to soar all the way to number one in the jam-packed NFC? And then, are you ready for Sunday night? The first chance at the last dance. We've got one of Michael's closest confidants live in this hour of Get Up, which starts right now, and a very special edition of Get Up and Go this morning as we take a look across our screen, and there they are, ready to go, as we will cover the big stories from the big sports. Adam Schefter, Adrian Wojnarowski, and Jeff Passan are all with me live. And Schefty, I'm starting with you because I was glancing during the break at your Twitter feed, which is basically at this point required reading for any football fan. And you have an interesting note here on Tua Tagovailoa, which I think is very significant as we prepare for the draft 6 days from now.
Greeny, there's been so much talk about Tua and the Dolphins dating back to last year and the Dolphins tanking for Tua. And as it turns out, on Thursday, March 12th, when this country began to undergo a change it's still feeling today, and the NFL was about to ban visits, the Dolphins and Tua were rushing to try to finalize a visit to make Tua the first college prospect to visit the Dolphins before the league turned out to ban visits on Friday, March 13th. They were trying to put it together desperately on Thursday the 12th and could not figure it out as much as they tried. And so at the last moment, the visit went by the wayside. Tua was unable to go to Miami on Friday, March 13th, as the Dolphins wanted. They wanted to put him through an extensive physical with their doctors there. The visit didn't happen. And so now the last time the Dolphins doctors have seen Tua was at the combine. And now, of course, everybody's left to wonder where they're at on Tua, as is the case with other teams with him. And so that would have provided a tremendous amount of clarity if that visit only could have happened on Friday, March 13th. But that was the day, of course, that everything went crazy in this world, and we still have not recovered from it. And the Dolphins, in the sports corner of the world, were never able to get an examination, an up-close examination of Tua.
Yeah, just to give everyone some perspective on where we're talking about with days, Wednesday night, March 11th, was the night that the NBA suspended its season. And so we're talking about the day after that, that they were trying to make this happen, and it never does. So that's very interesting. Let's talk about why it may be important. What sense are you getting from the Dolphins of their willingness to take the risk that is obviously associated with drafting Tua at five?
They have been through so much. They have gone through everything you could go through with the limited resources that they have at this point in time. And again, we'll find out next week exactly where they stand on it. But it seems like there's just been increasing buzz leading up to next week that they seem to be shying away from Tua, and they seem to be leaning towards Justin Herbert. Now, we don't know that that's true, but that certainly seems to be the mounting buzz out there at this point in time. They've geared up for this draft. They've added all the draft picks. Everybody's expected them to draft the quarterback at this point in time. But all signs now continue to point to Justin Herbert and not Tua, when Miami was the team that everybody thought was tanking for Tua.
So you're a reporter. You can't recklessly speculate. I can. So here's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking to myself, they were so desperate to get that physical, to get their hands and eyes on Tua in person, that it almost makes me feel like that was part and parcel of their decision, that without that, they maybe have been thinking to themselves, if we can't get this done, we just can't take him. That's the way my mind is going. Is that a dangerous place for me to allow my head to go?
Well, I think so. I wouldn't read too much into that. Look, Greeny, we are headed into a season, if it's played, of course, that there are going to be more questions, more uncertainties, more variables than any NFL season ever has had. And actually, I would say if there were ever a season that you'd want to go and draft Tua and roll the dice, this would be it. Because who knows if it's going to be a shortened season? Who knows what the conditions will be like? You just don't know. I had one team tell me last night that the importance of having a backup quarterback now is more important than ever before, because you don't know whether your quarterback could be out 3-4 weeks with a virus. So there's going to be more questions asked. So this might be a year to roll the dice on a player like Tua, but it certainly would feel a lot more comforting if your doctors had the extensive medical physical that the Dolphins were trying to put him through on Friday, March 13th, when they were trying to schedule that trip on Thursday the 12th. They couldn't get it done. And so now you're left sitting there, and maybe that just is the difference in the end, that they really like Herbert, they really like Tua, but they're going to take the safe approach if that's what they decide to wind up doing next week.
All right, Chefty, outstanding. Thank you. And obviously next week is a huge week for all of us with the draft. We will lean on you heavily. Have a great weekend, my man. Thank you. Let me get to basketball next. Jalen Green is the number one basketball prospect in the 2020 class. He announced yesterday he's bypassing college to enroll in the NBA's new G League Professional Pathway Program. It's a program that will pay elite prospects basically $500,000 and provide 1 year of development without playing full-time in the G League. It's a fascinating development, and for more on this, we bring in Adrian Wojnarowski. Woj, let's talk about the NBA here. They are moving forward with a program that essentially is competing with college basketball, if you look at it that way. What went into the decision to do this?
Well, competing with college basketball, Greeny, but also competing with the professional league in Australia. And that was more of an impetus to strengthen a program that was already in place financially, change the parameters of what the player would do over the course of the year around the G League. LaMelo Ball, RJ Hampton, who are two of the top players in this year's draft, went to Australia for contracts that were in the neighborhood of that $500,000 range. And Adam Silver, once that happened, Adam Silver really commissioned Sharif Abdur-Rahim, who's the president of the G League, former NBA All-Star, to go out into the marketplace, spend more time with families of these young prospects, the elite ones, and see what it would take to get them to come into an NBA development program. What he found out was that financially they had to elevate what they were offering. They did that for Jalen Green. Now, they're not going to do this for every player. Green's the number one player in the country right now. Jonathan Givony, our draft analyst, says if he was in this year's draft, he'd very likely go number one, and he's certainly the front runner to go number one next year.
All right, so he's that kind of good. So I can hear a lot of people watching their televisions this morning and yelling the following question at you. Woj, if the NBA doesn't want these players going to Australia and wants them to stay stateside and wants them to be able to get their market value, why don't they just allow them to come to the NBA directly out of high school? What is holding that up?
Talks between the Players Association and the NBA have been stalled for well over a year. The league would like to end one and done. They had hoped to have it in place by 2022 and then 2023, and now it's much further out than that. There's just the mechanisms that would be in place to end one and done, mainly allowing all NBA teams to get all the medical information on the players, that the agents and the players would have to provide it for everybody. That's been a sticking point for the players and the agents. That's been one significant snag in negotiation. So this is really a bridge to whenever one and done ends. And we may be with one and done until the next collective bargaining agreement in 2024, 2025. So this is really the best the NBA can do right now to provide, you know, a legitimate alternative to college basketball or having to go to Australia. And another factor for Adam Silver, now his teams don't have to travel across the world to scout elite American prospects in Australia. They would have them here to be scouted in that interim year before they head to the NBA draft.
It'd be interesting to see how many young players decide to take this route. Woj, have a great weekend. Thank you very much. And finally, let me turn to baseball and bring in Jeff Passan. Jeff, as we look to the return, the potential return of Major League Baseball as soon as possible, which, of course, everybody wants, we've been talking about the idea of establishing a bubble city to play the games. What are the hurdles they're dealing with right now to try and put that plan in place?
Well, the hurdles from the start, Greeny, have been enormous. But right now, Major League Baseball is being exceedingly judicious about how it tries to roll out a plan. They're talking with epidemiologists. They're talking with scientists. They're talking with people from whom they can get the medical information straight. Once they have that figured out, they can take the financial plan and what all of this is going to cost and bring it to ownership. And if ownership is on board with it, at that point, it goes to the players. That's the big question here, because the financial element ties in directly with the players. Remember, a couple weeks ago, MLB and the Players Association came to an agreement on a deal. But that deal also has a little caveat written in saying, hey, if we don't play in front of fans, the finances change, and we may need you to take a haircut off the salary that we have promised you prorated. And so that's where the big snag could wind up. But I have trouble thinking that the players and the owners are going to really get into it about salary and that this is the kind of thing that could scuttle a season beginning.
Quickly, Jeff, I heard Mike Trout, and I'm sure many other fans heard him. He was very vocal this week talking about quarantining away from his family. Does not sound like he wants to do that. He's the best player in the sport. How important is it that he had those comments?
I think it's important just for discourse, Greeny. Like, these are the issues that players should be talking about. And for every Mike Trout out there, there's a player from the Dominican Republic who leaves his family behind for 8 months out of the year. You have all of these different perspectives. And we have to remember, as prevalent as Mike Trout's voice is, there are 1,200 players in the MLBPA. There are 1,200 opinions, 1,200 voices. And all of those over the coming weeks are certain to be heard, because if they're going to play, this looks like the likeliest path, and they have to figure out how to make sure everybody, or at least as close to everybody as possible, is happy with what they have.
All right, Jeff Passan, outstanding. Jeff and Woj and Shefty, is there sports news to be had? We will have it for you here every morning on ESPN. Coming up, I have guaranteed the Eagles will not only win their division, but will be the one seed in the NFC. Zach Ertz is going to join me next to tell me I'm right. Looking forward to that. And then as we await The Last Dance, which chronicles Michael Jordan and the Bulls' last title season, we look back to what made it so tough and so rewarding at the same time. Let's get up on ESPN.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So at GEICO, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now it's our turn to share with the GEICO Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring three advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
We're back on Get Up, and I hope you are aware of the All-In Challenge by now. There are so many really cool things you can bid on to raise money for charities to provide food to those in need. Here are some of the items. You can bid to throw out the first pitch at a World Series game during next year's World Series. What a remarkable honor and great fun that would be. Obviously, you can also enter to win a chance to participate in the coin toss at a Giants game and have dinner with Eli Manning. A spectacular opportunity there. And you can try for the chance to design and call a play for the Eagles during a preseason game. There's no doubt that Orlovsky would like that. That would be a spectacular one. I was actually wondering ahead of time, if I got the chance to call a play during a game, what play I would call. Anyway, you have that opportunity. It's the All-In Challenge again, providing food to those in need. And another who is a part of this is Zach Ertz, the Eagles' terrific tight end, and he's good enough to spend a few minutes with us this morning. Zach, thank you for doing this. And what is your item that you have involved here in this All-In Challenge?
Yeah, so we are all in. My wife and I, as you know, my wife is the better athlete. So we are doing a double date with the two of us here in Philadelphia at one of our favorite restaurants in Philly. And then from there, we're going to be going to a Sixers game, sitting courtside. So it's going to be a huge, fun night, and it's going to be a great time.
That is fabulous. And for those who don't know, your wife, Julie, of course, is in the U.S. Women's National Soccer Team and is unquestionably the best. We love the commercials. We love the whole thing. My wife saw this yesterday. She wants to bid on the double date, so you may get stuck with us. We'll see.
But come on, Granny, let's do it.
The other piece of this is that you and your wife have become TikTok sensations during the quarantine. Now, how much planning goes into the TikTok?
Oh, man, the TikTok is a sore subject for the Ertz family. You know, my wife sits on there studying these TikToks, and she has these elaborate ideas for us, and sometimes I got to quell them just a tad. But overall, she's the brains behind the operation, and it's definitely something to do in quarantine.
Is there any debate as to which is the best athlete living in the Ertz household right now?
I mean, like you said, Greeny, you're married, so you know your wife's better at you than everything. So she's the better cook, she's the better person, she's a better athlete. But in all seriousness, my wife is a stud. And so I love everything she does as a person, first and foremost. You know, we met in college before I even knew she played soccer. She knew I played football. So we've been doing this thing for a while together.
Yeah, I remember that moment when she wasn't there when you guys won the Super Bowl and she found out that you won and she was crying. And it was wonderful. It's wonderful what you guys are doing here. But while I have you, I want to do a little football and I want to bring in your biggest fan, or maybe I should say Carson Wentz's biggest fan. Dan Orlovsky is with us. And Dan, I believe, wants to adopt Carson to become his son. He loves him that much. Dan, what question do you have this morning for Zach Ertz?
Yeah, Zach, good morning, man. Hey, listen, you guys faced incredible challenges last year on offense, and I really felt we watched Carson Wentz go from this talented thrower to this really big-time quarterback. And I want to hear from you during that time, kind of what did you see with his transition?
Yeah, I mean, obviously last year was we faced a lot of unique circumstances just in terms of the receiver position being hampered by injuries like they were. And Carson really showed his leadership capabilities during that time. You know, he was going – he was staying late with these young guys that he had just met. He was teaching them all these things that he wanted precisely done. And he was just really taking on that leadership role, not only for our offense and that receiver position, but our entire football team. So as you know, everyone knows I love playing with Carson. He's my guy. We've been doing it for a long time together. But I feel like his leadership quality has really shown those last really 4 weeks of the season.
Now, he made Orlovsky look good because Dan was on the Carson Wentz bandwagon in a huge way the entire year, and it worked out well. Here's my question for you. Looking ahead to this season, there are three new head coaches in your division in the NFC East, and yours, of course, is the exception. In what way do you think that continuity will be an advantage, especially given the current circumstances where who knows what exactly the offseason and training camp are going to look like?
I mean, like you said, we have three new coaches in our division. And so all those teams are learning new playbooks. They're trying to understand the new coaches' demands. Whereas we got one of the best head coaches in the NFL coming back. You know, we lost our offensive coordinator, but our D coordinator's still the same. So we're really excited as a team, as an organization about the future this year. Obviously, this whole offseason is extremely unique. So we don't know how it's going to even impact the Philadelphia Eagles. But I'll tell you what, whenever it's safe enough for us to go back to work, I cannot wait to get back into the building with some of these new guys coming in, with some of the guys we're going to draft in the next week or so, and really just take aim at that NFC East division title.
Yeah, unique, of course, is an understatement. So give us a sense for those of us who are wondering and are just huge fans of the sport. What kind of work can you do? What team work is possible for a football team on Zoom or whatever other ways you guys are able to be together for an off-season program?
Yeah, so the NFLPA just passed the virtual off-season program. So it's going to be around 2 hours of virtual meetings. It's going to be 2 hours of virtual workouts. Each team kind of has their own discretion of what the virtual offseason is going to look like. And so it's going to be really unique. You know, I don't exactly know what the Philadelphia Eagles are going to do in terms of virtual workouts or virtual meetings. But I know we're going to be doing everything we can to get guys on the same page, teaching guys the playbook, and holding guys somewhat accountable to the workouts if they're available. Obviously, it is a voluntary offseason for guys. But we still got to get better as football players, even though the circumstances are extremely different.
Well, Zach, this has been a pleasure. Thank you for doing this again. Thank you to you and Julie for providing this opportunity, which will no doubt raise a lot of money for the All In Challenge. And thank you. Best of luck. Stay healthy, and we'll see you on the field as soon as we can get there. Thanks, Zach.
Yeah, thanks, Greeny. See you, bud.
All right, there it is. And again, 100% of the money raised by the All In Challenge is going to benefit organizations providing food to those in need. If you would like to participate or if you want to learn more about how these organizations help, you visit allinchallenge.com. Coming up, the last of Michael Jordan's 6 titles with the Bulls might have been his toughest. We'll tell you why as we continue coming up. And then the Browns strongly deny they're shopping Odell Beckham. We'll talk about that as we continue as well. Let's get up on ESPN.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So at Geico, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now it's our turn to share with the Geico Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
The Last Dance is presented by State Farm. It is the highly anticipated 10-part documentary series, and it debuts on Sunday night. It captures the last of the Bulls' 6 championship seasons. Here's an excerpt which chronicles Michael Jordan's recovery from a foot injury.
I gradually worked my way up to a point where I'm playing 5-on-5 in a game, and I got the confidence that the foot is completely healed and I can play on it.
Michael asked him, well, if I play, what percentage is there that I'm going to get hurt again? Doctor said, yeah, 10%.
And I just lost it. I said, look, it's 10% chance, but it's 90% chance that I won't.
And then I chimed in to the doctors, what happens if the 10% kicks in? And they said, well, then his career would be over.
Well, everybody's just thinking about the negative. Well, I think the glass is half full. Everybody thinks it's half empty.
So I said to Michael, you're not understanding the risk-reward ratio. If you had a terrible headache and I gave you a bottle of pills and 9 of the pills would cure you and 1 of the pills would kill you, would you take a pill?
And I look at him, I said, depends on how bad the headache is.
Now that's so good. We're 2 days away from the debut. Again, the 10-hour documentary chronicling Michael and the Bulls dynasty. The first 2 episodes premiere Sunday night, 9 Eastern. There's an uncensored version for ESPN and the ESPN app. The edited for mature language version will be on ESPN2. And one of Michael's closest friends and confidants during all of that time is with us live here. What a pleasure to see Ahmad Rashad, longtime host of NBA Inside Stuff. Ahmad, it has been a long time, and you look like you've aged about 10 minutes. How are you this morning?
I'm doing fantastic, Mike. Nice to see you.
It's nice to see you as well. Every question I was going to ask you jumped out of my head when I saw that clip there, and I wonder, because you know Michael so well, like that moment where they're telling him, you can't play, it's too dangerous, and he's saying, why are you focusing on the negative? I mean, you know the man so well. What do you hear when you hear him in that moment there?
You know, that's him. He is the most confident person that you will ever, ever, ever see and never thinks of the negative. It's always about the positive, about everything. But I think it's because that's the way he runs his life. I mean, I don't think enough was said about the way he prepared to play the game. This guy, I'm telling you, he put the work in, and that's where all that confidence came from. And that's just the sort of way it is with him all the time.
And he demanded that from people around him. And I've seen these quotes where Michael apparently has said he's afraid that people will perceive him differently after they see the film. And the thought that brings to my head is when you're pushing everyone around you, when you expect basically the ultimate from yourself every day and you expect that from everyone around you, it helps you be successful. But maybe it doesn't, from the outside, it doesn't look exactly the way it feels from the inside. What did you hear when you heard him say he's worried that people will see him differently after they see the film?
Well, I think that most people, nowadays people can get in a locker room. Back in the day, the locker rooms were sacred and things that happened in a locker room sort of stayed in a locker room. And basketball, unlike any other sport, there's only 12 or 13 guys that are there for 6 months together, day in, day out. Now, when you're a leader, you demand everybody else to at least put in the work that you're putting in. Be as committed to it as you are. Now, on a football team, the impact is a little different. You got 60 guys. On a basketball team, there's 12 guys, 15 guys that are together day in, day out. So for somebody to sort of look inside of that, it's a family. It's a family, and things happen in family. There's fights. People say things to other people, and it's one of those things that it doesn't split them apart, but the things that you don't see. You don't see because you're outside that locker room. If you look at the Bulls, and as you look at this whole Last Dance thing, I think the thing Michael was worried about, that people might take things out of context. But that's kind of the way it is in sports. There's something, you might say something to somebody that, you know, might sound a little harsh from the outside, but inside it's tough love. It's tough love, and this is the way we're going to do it to try to find our way to a championship. And he was a master at that. I think people will see that, you know, in that he led by example, and he did not mince words. You know, it wasn't like the old, hey, I'm Michael Jordan. It was a tough, I'm Michael Jordan, and we're kicking some ass.
Right. And look, it arguably worked. I mean, they won six consecutive championships in years that he was there the entire time. And all of us who were in Chicago at the time used to call it minimum eight-peat. If he had never gone away, they would have unquestionably kept on winning. So that's interesting. You've become so well-known for your television presence. A lot of people probably don't even realize you played in the NFL all those years and were such a good player. So you know what that looks like from the inside. Leaders, there were a lot of leaders who were driven. Was he more so? Was Michael Jordan just more driven than anyone else you've been around in all your time in sports?
I'd have to say Tiger Woods is close, but not as, you know, Michael, there was just no other way. That's the way it was going to go. It was all about winning. I always thought that, you know, it was sort of funny that things that he used to sort of get himself inspired, and it would happen all the time that if he ever ran into another player during the offseason, the guy didn't say that it said something a little bit wrong, he used that against the guy the next time he played him. The guy he hit the shot with against Utah, I remember in the offseason, Michael was in the gym and he walked by and he goes, you know, you quit 1 year too soon because I was going to bust your ass. fast forward. And that's all Michael was talking about throughout the whole series. They were waiting for this guy. So, you know, it's kind of cool to see that. But when you look at great players, a lot of them are the same way. I'm sure that, you know, Fran Tarkin was that way. They put pressure on everybody to win, and it's a good pressure. It's not a bad pressure, and if you can't stand that pressure, then you shouldn't be in that situation.
You know, I was around those teams covering them as a very young reporter. My experiences are so much less broad than yours are. You've been around pro sports for such an incredibly long time. When people ask me what those teams were like, I always say there was nothing like it. I've never seen anything quite like it. Again, you've seen so much more than I have. How would you describe what that experience was like, what it was like being around that team in that time?
Phil Jackson was a master motivator. Now, Michael and I have talked about this many times, that he felt like the reason he reached the level that he reached is because he had a coach that challenged him every single day, that got the best out of him. So it was one of those situations where everybody sort of had to realize that they got to get on board here. And they had the best coach for it, too, because he would make sure everybody's included. You know, you win and lose as a team, but if you got a player like Michael Jordan, you got a better chance of winning. But when you put in people like Dennis Rodman, who, by the way, as you watch this series, you will realize that this guy is one of the great competitors of all time. One of the greatest players that I've ever seen. He was a little wacky and did crazy stuff off the court, but once it came to time to play, there was nobody quite like him. Him and Michael were a lot alike once they got on the basketball on the court. They were totally different off the court, but on the court, I'm telling you, it was something to watch Dennis Rodman just do the things that Dennis could do. And Phil Jackson able to handle all of that and put it all together.
No question. And how about the way the public viewed them? Like, we've seen some teams that just become larger than life. This is a terrible analogy, but I'm thinking of like Duke last year with Zion and the way people treated them. Jalen's teams, legendarily, the Fab Five, these are college things. In the NBA, they were like being around the Beatles. Being around them, I thought that when I was just following them around, I felt like I'm in the midst right now of the most famous people in the entire world. Were they just different from other teams you've been around?
Absolutely, Greeny. It was unbelievable. I remember going to games when they play on the road and you get to the hotel, it would be packed with people. They go to the bus to go to the game. They needed security to get from the hotel to the bus. And it was like the Beatles. I mean, I've used that so many times. They had a following, and the following was worldwide. It wasn't just here. It was all over the world. I remember going to China and being somewhere way out in the back somewhere and seeing Bulls jerseys on people's houses. And it was just crazy like that. But that's the kind of, and here's the other thing too, is they put on the performance. They never let people down. If they came to play a game, they played like the Chicago Bulls. And Michael would always say, you know what? Might be somebody in this place that never seen me play again, so my responsibility is to show them how good I am. And I think he lived up to that and did that every single night.
100%. That is the most important part of this. When Michael Jordan's last year, this year, the Last Dance team we're talking about, he played 82 regular season games. We live in a world right now of load management and all of that. Michael was 35 years old. He played in every game. And on a Tuesday night in February in New Jersey, he played like it was game 7 of the finals. So with that in mind, a final thing, and Ahmad, I so appreciate you doing this. You know, we are now talking to probably at least one, if not two generations of sports fans who didn't see Michael. My own son is 17 years old, loves basketball, and he always says to me, there's no way he was better than LeBron James. How do you describe to people who didn't see it, who aren't old enough to have seen it or just didn't see it, if I said to you, how do you explain just how good Michael Jordan was? How do you do it?
Well, first thing, Michael and I have talked about this a lot of times. He feels like you can't compare eras. I feel like if you had never seen Michael Jordan play, and you grew up watching LeBron James, in your mind, you think there's no one that possibly could be any better than that. But you never saw Michael Jordan play. You know, so you almost have to get somebody that's seen people over the years to sort of try to make that sort of comparison. But there is no, it's hard to compare. I just think that, you know, people, you know, like I said, like you said before, if you've never seen the guy play, you can't imagine anybody being better than LeBron James. You just can't even imagine it. But that means you never saw Michael Jordan play.
Exactly right. And starting this Sunday night, everyone who didn't get the chance will get that chance to see it again. The first two episodes of Last Dance will air Sunday night on ESPN. Ahmad, it is great to see you. Thank you for doing this. I really appreciate it. Enjoy the film, and I hope I'll see you again.
All right. Always good to see you. Have a wonderful day.
All right. You too. Good weekend. That's Ahmad Rashad, who was there for all of it. All right. Coming up, one option for college football if the season can't start in late August is playing next spring. What would it mean for a guy like that? We'll answer that question and more next. Get Up on ESPN.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So at Geico, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now it's our turn to share with the Geico Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
First responders and medical professionals on the front lines of this coronavirus pandemic. Our show is for you.
Y'all can't fool me. This honey bun was warm.
I've got a 14 t-shirt of magical sloppiness.
You get on your Netflix and you eat.
Who you starting the franchise with, man? Answer the question.
That is the question.
I'm going to start it with Sam Darnold.
And I'll catch you after this commercial when I'm done with this honey bun.
Hey, G.
It makes me sick.
G.
I can't be the only one who finds the way that we are communicating with Rex hilarious.
G.
Joe Burrow's going to a place that's never won, never had success, never had a quarterback do anything. It's utterly ridiculous.
That might have been my favorite moment that we've had on the show. Who is the best player in the 2020 NFL draft?
Me.
If you don't have a guy, you're going to get fired.
We checked the credentials.
Swagoo, that is a great throw.
I was something like a baller.
Marcus Spears is who I'm starting my franchise with.
That's my girl. That's my girl.
What a fun week it's been, and we thank you for coming along for the ride. Anyway, there were various possibilities being considered for the upcoming college football season. One of those is to move the season to the spring. Law interviewed Auburn basketball coach Bruce Pearl yesterday. This was interesting.
Got to be fine. We've got to play football. I mean, just from a financial standpoint, you know, 50 to 60 something percent of our operating income in the department is on football ticket revenue. And it's a culture. It's a sort of a, so I'm willing to make any adjustment necessary, you know, for us to be able to get through this.
Now that fascinates me. And as I bring the group back in here, Laura, again, what other sorts of things or what other people are saying similar things about just the importance of getting a football season played?
Well, look, I continue to believe that we will have college football in the academic year of 2020 and 21. It just may have to be pushed back a little bit. And all of these conferences, the NCAA, are trying right now to plan for football in the fall, right? That's what we would all like to do. There is a timeline here that allows for some time to figure that out. So the end of May, early June, they're going to reassess where the country is. But let's say that that's not possible. Let's say an on-time start is not possible with fans in the stadium, because that's so crucial. As you just heard Bruce Pearl allude to, and as we've talked about, the revenue is essential from these fans being at the games. Maybe they do push it back to the spring. And when I first heard this, guys, I thought it was crazy, okay? But let me just lay this out. This could be a possibility that is being discussed. Of course, nothing decided upon at this point. Maybe you get players back sometime in January. You have them working out. You get them ready to play. You have 6 weeks' time to do that. Begin the season sometime in February. Only play conference play. So you're not playing all the games. It's a shortened season. If your team makes it to the college football playoff, you play about 12 games. And then you have maybe a month or so off. This is sometime in May that the season would end. You have a month or so to get ready to begin and play the following season. Of course, there's no perfect answer here. But if you are a team that's in the college football playoff under the current schedule, you finish playing sometime around the second week of January, you start spring practice in preparation for that sometime in February, a lot of times. So the layoff time is not all that different under this model. The idea here, guys, is to get college football into this fiscal year to, of course, help from the financial standpoint, but also to try and help from everybody's safety. One guy told me that's very close to all of these conversations that so much of this, too, has to do with seeing a full weather cycle for the coronavirus and how that is affected. My final point on this: they cannot afford to start a season and have to stop it. That would be catastrophic.
All right, Dan, I want to come to you here, because that model that she just laid out, let's call it 10 games that you play in the spring and then 12 games that you play in the fall for the kids who don't graduate. You're going to play, you had a football players playing 22 games in a calendar year. Is that reasonable?
Yeah, it's reasonable, Greeny. I mean, they're young athletes. They've got great medical staffs. Is it ideal? Obviously not. But what happens if it's the only option? Like Laura mentioned this, when she first heard about the spring football, she thought it was crazy. But I'd ask this, what's crazier, playing spring football when everyone is safe from this global pandemic, or forcing fall football when you're putting people at risk? I mean, what's crazier? And so would there be challenges for the student athletes? Absolutely. But one thing we've made clear is college athletics and college universities need football, right? Like, they financially need football. So if the only option, no matter who wants to call it a stupid option, what happens if it's the least stupid of all the stupid options? And it's the only choice we have as college football fans and college football has as a body, is to do spring football and then fall football. What happens if it's the only option? Then it's not so stupid. And so it would be taxing on players, but it might be the only option.
Marcus, I want to go ahead. Swagger, go.
It's stupid. No, it can be stupid. Even if it's the only option, it can definitely be stupid. And I know we had conversation earlier about us trying to remove, obviously, these players playing football and you venturing away from it being amateurism. I think that would be the most devastating thing to call in college football amateurism, because in the same breath, we're saying these kids can play 22 games within a calendar year and they're amateurs. And also we're saying that they need to play 22 games if the season can start in the spring for financial reasons.
Right.
And that is exactly what the conversation
to benefit
has been
everyone
with the NCAA and amateurism in student-athletes.
Correct, Marcus. To benefit all these other people. And you know what? All those things are important.
Yes.
But it isn't the football player's responsibility. Super quickly, Marcus, what I was going to ask you is, if they play in the spring and you're Trevor Lawrence, you're going to be the number one pick in the draft at some point and start playing
in the
NFL.
I'm not playing in the fall.
What are you going to do?
I already know your question.
You don't play
in the spring. I'm not playing in the fall. If we play, no way. No way. If I play in the spring,
correct,
I'm not playing in the fall if I'm a projected top 10 pick, top 15. Not doing it.
No, Trevor Lawrence doesn't play in the spring. Trevor Lawrence does not play in the spring. He'll be in the NFL by the fall. Trevor Lawrence will not play in the spring, and he should not.
Right, and neither would a lot of the players who project to be very high picks. Look, there's a million tentacles to this, and we'll continue to stay on top of it. As we continue, the last dance, again, with Michael Jordan and the Bulls and their final championship. So much to discuss with Stephen A. Smith, who joins us next. Get up on ESPN. First Take is just a few minutes away. I have a moment with Stephen A. Smith to look ahead to The Last Dance, which is brought to you by State Farm and will debut on Sunday night on ESPN, chronicling the last of the Michael Jordan 6 championship seasons. The first two episodes will air on Sunday night starting 9 o'clock Eastern time. And again, Stephen A. is with us here. And Stephen A., I'll just ask you the simplest of questions because you and I were both there for all of that. When you think back on those teams, what's the single biggest thing that stands out in your memory?
Well, for me personally, it was Michael Jordan's first title because he had to get through the Pistons in order to do it. And I'm one of those guys that I've got a lot of love and respect for what I saw the Detroit Pistons doing in the 80s, the battles that they had with the Boston Celtics with Larry Bird, Kevin McHale, and those boys before they overcame them, went to three straight NBA finals, won back-to-back titles, and they consistently stood in Michael Jordan's way. It was the biggest thorn in his side. And when he overcame that, you know, with the flip over the head or, you know, in a fast break against Bill Laimbeer, with him going against the Pistons the way that he did, fighting off the Jordan rules and what have you in order to ultimately capture his first crown. That is what always stands out of my mind above anything else when I think about the Chicago Bulls.
Yes, beating the Pistons, sweeping the Pistons that year, I think he would probably consider to be one of his favorite memories. And again, Stephen A. and company are just 4 minutes away here on ESPN. Steve, have a great show. Thank you very much, and I will see you soon. And I want to bring Marcus Spears back in as we finish up this morning, because when I was talking to Ahmad Rashad, I asked him to help describe to younger sports fans who didn't get to see Michael Jordan play what made him so great. And Marcus, I've heard a rumor that while that conversation was going on, you expressed an opinion. I'd like you to share that opinion with our audience right now.
Yeah, gee, I'm taking LeBron James over MJ. Like, this is nothing new for me. I'm partial to what LeBron James has done in his basketball career, more so than I am in Michael Jordan's career. Not to diminish anything from Michael Jordan, and a lot of people well respect him as the GOAT. I just personally believe LeBron James is the GOAT of basketball. That's my opinion. I'm sticking to it. You're not going to change my mind. Now go ahead and try.
I'm not going to try. I'm going to ask you the simplest question in the English language. It only requires three letters. Why?
Because LeBron James, to me, has qualities of an NBA basketball player, of a basketball player in general, whether it's talent, a God-given ability, that no player in the NBA has had that I've ever seen.
Yes, I don't disagree with that. LeBron James was able to do things Michael Jordan wasn't able to do. But what I would tell you is that Michael Jordan had qualities that no other professional athlete I've ever seen before in my entire life had either. And I don't like making these debates because sometimes it feels like you have to diminish one to raise up the other. LeBron is spectacular. He is on my Mount Rushmore of basketball history, and I am frequently accused of being a LeBron apologist and lover. But what I will tell you, and I am guilty as charged, but what I will tell you is he wasn't Michael. Because I'm telling you right now, if your life depended on the outcome of one basketball game, and I told you you could either have Michael Jordan or LeBron James on your team to win that game, I would take Michael Jordan and I would survive the experience. And if you took LeBron James and my team had Michael, you would lose.
Gee, no. Listen, you have a great way of bringing up these analogies and things like that. That's why you are such a smart man, bro. But let me tell you something when it comes to this conversation, because I've had it out with my boys, Jamar, Cottrell, Luttrell, my boys. They have not managed over 10, 15 years to change my mind about LeBron James being the best basketball player ever. I'm not changing my mind, G. The things that I've seen LeBron James do, you have to prove to me that you can see another dude do it at that level, and that's with some of the God-given ability. Look, you can't take away 6'8", 250. You can't take away the fact that he plays the game the way I'm partial to guys playing the game. Everybody talks about this killer instinct that MJ has, which he had. That's not to take away. Obviously, getting in the non-diminishment role. They talk about the killer instinct with Kobe. I'm partial to LeBron James playing the way LeBron James played. I'm partial to an 18-year-old kid coming into Cleveland before anybody knew who the Cavaliers were or paid attention to them and being able to carry the torch. That's just me, bro. I'm a LeBron James guy. I won't change. LeBron is the GOAT to me.
I have a quick second for you, Orlovsky. Which side of this are you on?
Yeah, Michael Jordan is the greatest of all time. Yeah. I mean, LeBron being even in the conversation speaks to his greatness, sure. But Michael Jordan is the greatest of all time, Marcus. You're wrong like you've been all week.
So Dan's on the right side. All right, we are out of time. It's been a wonderful week. Thank you for spending it with us. We'll see you Monday. First Take starts now.